Okay, our first order of business today is approval of the agenda. So moved. Everyone in favor? Aye. Opposed? None. Abstentions? None. Motion carries. Second item will be the approval of the Academic Senate meetings from October 12th. Additions, deletions, changes?
So moved.
So moved. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. And abstentions? None. Very good. Announcements. Are there any announcements? Please come to the microphone. Okay, then I'll make an announcement from here. The Graduate Council will be meeting on December 11th in the Meiskens Flex Space from 12:15 to 1:15. If there are any senators that are interested in becoming part of the Graduate Council or in becoming part of the discussions that come up, please get in touch with me. And if you know of anyone who's interested also, have them get in touch with me. So that date is Monday, December 11th, 12:15 to 1:15.
Excuse me, could you tell us what the Graduate Council is? Could you tell us what the Graduate Council is?
Okay, what's going to be happening is the college has undergone a study of graduate programs, and the study will include, I don't have the document, I'll be happy to send it to anyone who needs it. One of the items there will be a graduate council, and what we're looking at is something that's still in the stages of being set up. So actually, at this meeting, this is something that we will be looking at. I would love to have a representative from the Senate to be there, especially if it's the executive committee or really any senator, and we're going to be formulating this graduate council and looking at it. Depending on what happens, it might become part of the Senate, it might become apart from the Senate. We're really now in the stages of getting that together, so if anyone is interested, please let me know.
I'm interested, and I think there should be a substantial representation by members of the Academic Senate at this formative meeting.
Bessie Hendry and Provost, what I wanted to say is that I've been referring to this as actually a proto-graduate council because one of the recommendations of the Graduate Program Review was that we pull all of the graduate advisors and perhaps others together in a graduate council so that there could be discussions of common interest to graduate programs, more opportunities for collaboration between graduate programs. But as Manny says, we don't yet know what it will look like, and we're looking for input at this point. Whether it ends up being exactly as was recommended in the program review or in other ways, what role it will play in governance, I think needs to be discussed, and that's one reason I think it's important. I thank you for inviting the Senate to participate.
Right. And what I'd like to do through the Senate is make sure the Senate has some representation. So that's why I'm asking you, instead of going directly to the person who's chairing that meeting, Michael Wolf, come to me if you're coming through the Senate, and then I will notify Michael that you're going to be at that meeting on December 11th. Any other announcements? Okay, let's go to item 3A. When I was growing up in New York City, between 1957, when the Dodgers and the Giants moved to the West Coast, and 1962, when the Mets were born, there was only one baseball team in New York City. And probably the best pitcher on that team was a guy named Whitey Ford. And his nickname was the chairman of the board. Well, Whitey Ford, step aside, because now at Queens College, we have a new chairman of the board. And that chair is the chair of the Hispanic Association of Colleges and Universities. And we're so lucky to have him here today, our guest speaker and our president, Chair Felix Matos Rodriguez.
I find it funny that I come and everybody leaves, and I don't know if it's a metaphor or anything else, and I hope that was not the only one that, as Manny was introducing, he was trying to figure out where he was going with that introduction, but thank you so much, and proud to have been a board member of the Hispanic Association of Colleges and Universities for a number of years. And as you know, Queens College became a Hispanic serving institution about 3 years ago. And so it's probably the most important of the professional associations lobbying on behalf of schools that have that are Hispanic serving. So there's more funding for Hispanic serving institutions. And so happy to be part of HACU. And so that you know the full story. I was president, vice president for a year, and you're supposed to serve for 2 years, and then, you know, the president goes and you replace the president. The president, the chair of the board, William Flores, stepped down as the president from Antioch for health reasons, so he couldn't be the chair board anymore. So I became the chair board a year early. So happy to do that. Delighted to be here with you today, and what I hope to do is maybe talk briefly about a couple of things and leave a lot more time for questions or things that might come from the floor up. I always find that to be a much more productive way to use the time, and also if I cover a lot of ground but I don't touch on some of the things that are of importance to you, I'd much rather have it be the other way around and address fewer things and make sure that if there's things, questions that you might have or things that you might want to bring up, that we have plenty of time to do that. We continue with our celebrations of the 80th anniversary and having a whole number of events. I want to thank many of you who have participated, who have been able to connect events that you were thinking of doing, you were organizing as part of our 80th celebration. And, you know, we had a reception the day of our actual birthday on October 11th. Where we had an early morning gift, and when we read in the newspapers that one of our alumni, Christina Jimenez, had been one of the this year's sort of MacArthur Genius Award. Christina graduated in 07 from political science, so what a better way to really signal so many things consistent with our mission and our values that, speaking about academic excellence, one of our students, you know, at the age of 33, gets one of the most prestigious awards in the country. And we've had a number of MacArthur Genius Awards before, so this was not the first one for us in the college, but also that she got selected in part because of her work in excellence in working with undocumented students, which is a topic that is so dear to our hearts, something that she was engaged in as an undergrad here, being mentored by our faculty and being nourished by that motto of ours, we learn so that we may serve. And I think many of you know that she was instrumental back then for the fact that now undocumented students pay in-state tuition in New York State. So we are so happy that her activism, her agency, which was nurtured here, have given very concrete results and benefits to generations of our students. And now she's doing that work at the national level. We had Justice Sotomayor on campus, which was such an honor to have such a distinguished and such a brilliant and humble servant come and address the campus community, and a whole range of events. So thank you for participating. There's more to come, and what I've enjoyed about the events that I've been able to participate is, again, after 80 years of reaffirmation of the things that make us special as an institution, the contributions that we have made to the city, to the state, to the country, and the vital role that we keep playing. So It's also a pleasant year for me in the sense that at least since I've been here, this is the beginning of my fourth year, we don't have middle states, we don't have some of the things that, as important as they might be, they sort of consume a lot of time and energy, and I hope that we can use some of this time and energy in this year to look at some things that we've been all wanting to do, projects that we all have in our departments, our divisions, to advance the work that we do on the college in a way that has less interference by important but external factors such as middle state. So for me, it's a really important year to advance some of the things that we have on the strategic plan. I wanted just to share, we had, as many of you know, this is the first year that we began a project which is unique in New York City, which is our QC in 4 program. And we're the only school, not just in CUNY, but in New York City, that has a pact or a partnership with our entering freshman students, beginning with this class that came in this year, in which we say, if you take 30 credits every year, and you can divide those up in any way that you want, you can do 12 something in the winter, 12 something in the summer, you can do that in whatever way that might make sense for you. You keep doing that, you connect with an advisor a couple of times a year. You promise not to add a minor or a major or anything like that without having a conversation with an advisor. You register early. You do those things. And we pledge to you that senior year, the courses that you need to graduate will be there for you. And obviously, we know that the students who do that have a map that often leads to be able to graduate in four years. And this has been of incredible interest to high school counselors, to parents. I mean, we sort of did the rollout last year. It got the benefits, or it got connected with the whole Excelsior rollout. So we hope that this year it'll be a cleaner way to be able to speak about both and how they can supplement each other, but how they're distinct. And we've gotten, you know, very, very good response from our feeder schools and in terms of the interest and the uniqueness of this program. There's also some interesting data that I just want to share. The number of first-time freshmen taking 15 credits or more in this class is 71%, right? The number the fall before was 65, the number that before was 58. Right? Whether, you know, in 1 year, we cannot claim that that's a trend, and we cannot make direct causality with either Excelsior or QC in 4, but we do think that this language is reinforcing, and for the students that are able, and it makes sense for them to be able to do that, because we don't want to have students who cannot take that academic load or might not be the best recipe for them to do that, but we do think that this is a very positive trend, and that this would help our students complete in time, or even have more flexibility moving forward in terms of credit accumulation. We'll see next fall how it plays out after a second year of the QC in 4 program, but again, it's been, we think, showing early benefits, and the feedback from the high school community and the parents and the counselors and all those has been extremely positive, and has been able to put us in a separate niche. Nobody else, not even the privates, make that commitment to their students. I'm also very delighted, and it's sort of connected with the announcement that the provost made, that we had last year a group of chairs and faculty looking really for the first time in depth at how do we do graduate education here at Queens. And it is one of the things that we have said we wanted to emphasize in our strategic plan. It is something also we have talked here, and this is something that I've shared with you in the past, that we continue to have enrollment growth for the past 4 years, but that enrollment growth has come fundamentally from the undergraduate side, and we continue to lose graduate enrollment, and that is not a healthy trend, and it's something that we need to find ways to reverse. So timely that we had this review from our faculty about our graduate programs. Our report came out. One of the suggestions was what the provost mentioned, that maybe there ought to be some body, right? Could it be called the graduate council or something else that sort of was, you know, looking at these things. And clearly the input from the Senate, the PMB, and other bodies is going to be key in whatever we decide is the appropriate way to do this. But the one of the key findings of that report was that we need to do a much better job at emphasizing graduate education here, which is somewhat tricky because we're unique in higher ed in terms of having a campus, the graduate center, right, that specializes in graduate education. If we look at any of our other institutions, they don't have that similar setup, and maybe has meant that we have not emphasized that part of our mission here, and that many of our faculty, the work they do with graduate students, they always sort of consider it to be mostly based in the graduate center, with the exception perhaps of our education faculty, that component has always been a key part of the program. So I concur with that analysis from the report that we need to find ways to first create an identity for what our graduate programs are, what the value proposition is, how it is connected with the larger mission of the college. And I think that one could make a really great argument that in an institution that is advancing a liberal arts and science education of the students, the early engagement about the possibility of graduate work is a value that we could all embrace, that we have many talented students who end up doing that, and maybe we could encourage more to do so. So for me, this whole exploration as to how we can ramp up our graduate programs, how we can ramp up their visibility, how we can think about the offerings that we have, additional offerings that might come, how we can connect with our students earlier in their undergraduate years to think about potentially getting their master's and sort of weaving that into the larger identity of the college will be a very positive thing for the institution. So I've been very supportive of the conversations that have been led by the provost and her team on how to be able to advance that. We feel that we have a really great opportunity, and we do know that we have some BA, MA programs in existence. We think we have a great opportunity to rethink that a little bit and sort of ramp that up in ways that are beneficial both to our undergraduate, to the graduate students that we wanted to attract from the outside. So for me, again, in a year where we don't have middle states, we don't have some of the other things, I think it's a great opportunity to have some of the in-depth conversations that need to occur about resources, curriculum, governance, all the things that will be connected with those things, and also how we can be much more supportive as a campus to our graduate students. In some divisions, there's been investments in rooms for graduate students, little things to be able to start building community among our graduate students. And I think that is first consistent with some of the things we had laid out in the strategic plan. I think is a smart move for us to do in terms of the mission of the college and our intellectual journey, both as faculty members and as students. And I also think that it is smart at a time of fiscal tightness to be able to try to reverse some of that trend in terms of declining graduate enrollment and growth on the undergraduate side. This year, and I think that you had a presentation of the enrollment numbers in one of the previous Senate meetings. We have about the growth on the undergraduate side was mostly driven by new first-time freshmen. We had about 200 and change more first-time freshmen that we had sort of planned for, and it's too early to tell whether QCM4, Excelsior, a combination of both played a role. I believe that in the first Senate meeting, someone asked, and again, the Excelsior numbers are still enrolling, but you know, we have about 550 students that benefited concretely from the Excelsior program, and that's about 10% of all the students CUNY-wide that benefited from the Excelsior program. So clearly, we do seem to have, at least at this stage, a larger cohort than many of our other sibling institutions. So again, that's another trend which I think is important for me. I was very glad that both the Queens College Foundation accepted my suggestion to use some additional funding from the strategic allocation that they provide to the college each year to go into the faculty research fund, the competition that the provost office organizes every year. We were able to pull $100,000 from the King's College Foundation for that fund, and we also got $100,000 in addition from the auxiliary to sort of make that a much more robust pool. And I know the provost office has sort of share the guidelines for that competition to encourage research from the faculty at a time where some of the other avenues for funding for research projects or the beginning of a research project have been drying up in CUNY and elsewhere. And the last thing that I'll mention and then really open it up for your questions on these things or other things is that one of the things which is an important component to our strategic plan, which is the whole idea of taking advantage of the diversity of the Borough of Queens that our student body brings, that we're really making a concerted push to make sure that our student body population, to the extent that it is reasonable, resembles more some of the breakdown of the students coming out of the schools in Queens, although we serve the city and the state. We're not just Queens-based, but we need a point of reference, and we want to use that one. And also, we continue to diversify our faculty and staff to hopefully have a professional body serving the students that resembles the students that we serve. So, and I know that many of you in your departments have been in either existing searches or others thinking about ways to do that, and happy to be supportive in that effort. So I can talk about a whole bunch more other things, but we're all sort of fanning and usually assigned that heat, time of the day, president speaking. I might have a couple of people collapsing. I don't want that to happen. So happy to take any questions about these things, other things on your minds. As always, happy to listen. Let me make this easy. I'll give you the microphone. You don't have to.
Yeah, okay. It's all right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Okay.
I'll stay close. I can
catch me if I fall. All right. President's standing right here. I'm embarrassed. no, but seriously. I, with respect to graduate enrollment, isn't it anticipated that there will be an increase related to the fact that there will be more people pursuing education in the future, because a lot of teachers in New York State, it is anticipated, will be retiring in the next few years. So consequently, we will have more and more students coming in, undergraduate and graduate, as ed majors. And if that is so, then there will be a regeneration of numbers of students in our academic courses, because our master's students in education take academic courses also. That's one of my points. The other one is, I remember, I believe it was last year or maybe the year before, you mentioned that with respect to enrollment trends, that two-thirds of the entering students a year ago or maybe 2 years ago were transfer students. So I wanted to know what the percent is currently.
Thank you so much. So, two things. The two-thirds were not, or transfer were not the entering students. We had about two-thirds of our overall students were transferred. Right, so the overall student body was predominantly transferred. We, with the increase this year of about those 200 and plus new first-time freshmen, it is the first time in a couple of years where the number of first-time freshmen increased and the transfer students went down. We don't know if that's a trend, right? That's a one-year phenomena. We think that if we can keep that balance, that is a much more healthy balance in terms of enrollments and services and all of those things. Not that you don't want the transfer students, but when the numbers get too skewed, right, then you become too dependent, and then you're more vulnerable to fluctuations in the enrollment. So I think that you want to have a much more balanced pocket of students from which to draw in. And the other factor is that the community colleges have seen a slight decline in enrollment in the last 2 years, so it might be that we might be beginning to see some of that effect moving forward, and then we need to be more aggressive on the first-time freshmen. So that's your second question. About education, you're absolutely right. And again, we have faculty here who represent the different schools of ed who might have more particular knowledge about trends in each of the fields. But, you know, teacher education, like graduate students in general, goes through trends. And at some point, you have too many people coming out, and there's a glut, and then there's a shortage. And we seem to be moving to more of a shortage. Clearly statewide for folks in our ed programs. So that should bode well for our particular graduate ed enrollment. I think one of the lessons to be learned of the last couple of years is that the fact that our graduate enrollment was so heavily dependent on the enrollment from the divisions of the School of Ed, right, that we ought to make that mix a lot better so that when those cycles go down, right, in which there is less demand for teachers, right, if our numbers go down, some of our other graduate programs can pick up the slack, right? If you look at a place like Hunter, for example, right, their graduate numbers have been able to be fairly stable because they do have, I mean, now that the School of Public Health is gone, we'll see how things play out, right? But for a while, they have public health, education, social work. So in addition to some of their other programs that they had from the, you know, arts and science faculty. So if the ed numbers were down, social work tend to be fairly stable, public health was going up. And I think that we need to the extent that is consistent with current offerings that we have, that we could expand, or ones that we could grow based on the expertise of the faculty, to try to be less dependent on the cycles on graduate enrollment in education. So if the education enrollment grows and we have a more diversified portfolio, then, you know, we'll be better off. So I'm hoping that prediction plays out, but I do think that overall we want to be able to think about what are the master's programs that we might have now that we feel can increase capacity, what might be other offerings that we might do, and again trying to create that in a way that's connected also with the mission of the undergraduate education. We have a great talent in our students and who some come to our graduate programs, but I think that we could do probably a lot more to engage them and make them think about that offer, which many, particularly the ones in the liberal arts, end up doing to be able to get credentials to be competitive in the market. Yes.
So Stephen Grover, philosophy. I understand that this talk of a graduate council is at very earliest stages. I suppose from the point of view of the Senate, One thing that might be good to have reassurance of now is that there's no intention to take away the Senate's control of graduate curriculum matters.
I have, in the draft that I have seen, and Betsy might be better, that has never been part of the conversation.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Not at all.
Yep. And, you know, and that'd be wrong for the wrong reason, and that'd be duplicitous. I mean, that'd be a silly, you know, so to sort of think about that. So, the thrust of the message was, we need, you know, we don't really have a space where some of these graduate things are discussed, cared about, and that's the space we were trying to generate.
Hi, I'm Alex Reichel from Political Science. We're one of the fortunate departments to be engaging in a search for a new faculty member, and we're also very concerned about diversity in our faculty, especially after some losses in our department. I'm on the search committee for the first time, and we met with the diversity team and went through a kind of plan for how we could do outreach in various ways to reach a more diverse applicant pool. I was very surprised that we were not allowed to know the identification, racial, ethnic identification of that applicant pool. And my understanding of affirmative action law is that we are perfectly within our rights to take the race and ethnicity into account as we're, among other things, as we're evaluating applicants. And it seems to me that we're tying our hands if we're making outreach to try to get a diverse pool, but then we're not allowed to know who is who among that pool. So I don't know if you, I mean, I don't know and don't need an answer, but I think it might be helpful if the college were to maybe review what are our policies exactly about affirmative action and make sure that we're using all the tools and that we have all those tools available to us in order to really accomplish this goal.
Okay, thank you. Two thoughts. My sense is that when I see Glenda walking down the steps, the lawyer, it is a signal that watch out what you're going to say. There's a legal answer, and so I'm going to allow her to. Was that associated with that? And then I'm also going to make a comment about that. So let's get the lawyer first, and then I might venture into terrain.
Just so you know, your chair actually and I spoke about this concern, just to make sure that basically when people apply to CUNY First, they can actually put in their, they can self-identify.
And, which is voluntary. They don't have to.
Voluntary, they don't have to. And so there's a question of whether the law required doesn't allow us to share that, whether it's a practice, whether it's a policy. And what's interesting is when I was speaking with the chair, I said, look, we need to do some research, but obviously it is helpful if departments have this information and use it in a way and it becomes and we become a more diverse place. On the other hand, if we give that information out and we continue to hire as we have in the past, is that something that could be helpful in a lawsuit against us to say that we are using that information to keep this campus not as diverse as it could be? That being said, in my office, we deal with a lot of very practical things and not with a lot of policy, constitutional law stuff. And so that's one of the things we'll be talking about what the law is, what the practice is, what the policy is, and what it should be, so that we can provide the assistance that you guys need to do the work that you need to do. So I was on the phone today, a really challenging day, but a really good conversation with Pat about this very issue.
All those are valuable lessons as we try to do our things about what are the tools that we can use to the best way. So that's the spirit of the commentary. And I think one of the things that we're trying to do is take some of that message to in terms of central office for either things that might be our own created rules or interpretations of laws that might need to be reconsidered. Or if not, then have a good answer as to why not. But one challenge, if you wish, in that component is the fact, first, that is entirely voluntary, right? And again, this is, I mean, we can have a conversation about those things, but, you know, think about, let me take an easy example so nobody gets hurt, right? So you know, a president was appointed 3.5 years ago. All right? Matos Rodriguez, you guys, I mean, you all know I'm Puerto Rican, right? But if when I took the job, for whatever reason, either by mistake, which can happen, right? I forgot to self-identify in that first day, either in the search or in HR or whatever. You know, you might think that you are, my God, you know, you have a Latino president. If I didn't self-identify on the records, that wouldn't show. And that is some of the limitations we have with data, which also talks about the student body too, which is also voluntary. So we have, but I think the more that we have good conversations, good thinking, I think the better the outcomes would be, and we'll have the tools to do what we all want to do. So thank you.
Do you think there are any particular programs at the school that are like especially suited for the future that you think will be growing in the future? Or are there any new programs that the school is exploring that you think will be growing in the future?
Oh, I mean, my sense is that in terms of either new programs or new configuration of programs, those are things that I think are faculty-led in terms of either expertise that we have or areas that we identify as a community, you know, that are needed. So in that sense, you know, I might have some personal opinions, but I do think that is one of those things that is better led to the process to occur. I do think that we do have some sort of traditional pockets of excellence that it'd be smart to continue to make sure that they remain that way and that we continue to invest. But I think those things are much better when it comes from what the faculty has, or when, you know, when we do, sometimes when you do the department reviews, for example, there's information that comes about new trends or new configurations. There's probably growth for like interdisciplinary programs. I mean, in terms of, you know, things that already exist that might be recombined in different ways. But I think those things are much better done if they come out of sort of an organic conversation from the faculty. Did you have some opinion about some of those things, or it was?
For me, it's something to think about.
No, absolutely, absolutely. Thank you.
I'm glad you brought up the self-reporting. Speaking in a graduate program where we have no permanent white male faculty members, we have a lot of very diverse population, but one might not necessarily know how diverse because the default in student applications is white male. And I'm hoping there's some way to address that where self-reporting could be could happen after an application so that we have a truer fix on who our population is, both faculty and students.
But you know, one thing that might be interesting, you bring up a good point, and it might be good at some point, and that might be too technical, so I will defer to Manny and the executive committee, but you know, we can also bring in Chair Littman, our Dean of Institutional, and she can talk about, because at least on the undergraduate student ones, right, I don't think the default is anything. I think that if you don't, it says not listed.
If actually the note I'm writing to myself to check because it should default to public. So I'll double check, and I thought I did,
but
you can check that.
That
would be nice.
There are, and I think Cheryl will be the person to, because she knows these things back and forth. I know that, for example, for the reporting for iPads, right? And this might be one of those things in which you might see some numbers on one thing and you look at another numbers and you go like, they're not exactly the same. It is my understanding, and I'm going to let the Senate minutes reflect that it is my understanding, which could be a wrong understanding, that on iPads at the university level, right, there is an agreement, and these other colleges do it too, with the Department of Education, in which we do some extrapolation of numbers based on statistics, because you assume some students do not, right? I know that we only do that with certain reporting that we have to do, and I know IPETS is one. But I think it'd be interesting to have Cheryl Lippman, who is the expert about all these things are done, either clarify some things and talk about that, if that makes any sense to all of you.
Thank you.
Going once, going twice, man is standing up. That means that my time is over. So the chairman of the board gladly returns the meeting to the chair of the Senate.
Thank you very much.
He took my line there. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All right, let's get back to our agenda. There are no special motions. Item 5A, the Undergraduate Curriculum Committee, dated October 12th.
I'd like to move the minutes of the October 12th Undergraduate Curriculum Committee meeting and ask for unanimous consent.
Are there any objections to unanimous consent? Seeing none, motion passes. Thank you. The Graduate Curriculum Committee minutes, October 11th.
I move the minutes of the Graduate Curriculum Committee October 16th, actually, and ask for unanimous consent.
Any objections to unanimous consent? We'll change that to October 16th. That is correct. It's wrong on the agenda. No objections to unanimous consent? Okay. Motion passes. 5C, nominating committee report.
The nominating committee asks for your unanimous approval of the slate of nominees.
Any objections to unanimous consent?
Thank you.
All right, seeing none, motion passes. Let me just mention that for the spring semester, we were thinking of inviting Cheryl Lippman here to speak to us, so we were trying to work that out for February, March, something like that, okay? Old business, 6A, nominations to the nominating committee, faculty, social science seat. Any nominations? All right, seeing none. The next one then, faculty for math and natural science. All right, seeing none then, we'll refer that back to the committee. Number 7A, the last item on the agenda, University Faculty Senate elections. These have to be done from the floor, so we have any nominations?
I nominate Stephen Harris.
Stephen Harris. Any further nominations? Okay, seeing none then, Secretary will cast one vote for Stephen Harris.
Motion to adjourn.
Okay, all in favor? Yes. Thank you very much.